Powerful Women Let's Talk is made possible in part by Family Fair, keeping it real.
Produced by women about women, Powerful Women Let's Talk is a series of interviews with women who have helped shape our community and transform who we are and how we live.
Hello, everyone, and greetings. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Jennifer Moss, and we're excited because it is time for yet another edition of Powerful Women Let's Talk. Today, I would like to introduce you to today's powerful woman, Lisa Oliver King. Lisa is the founder and executive director of Our Kitchen Table, which is a grassroots nonprofit organization serving Grand Rapids. Our Kitchen Table, or OKT for short, seeks to promote social justice while empowering our neighbors to improve their health and environment through information, community organizing, and advocacy. Lisa, welcome to you. So glad to have you here today.
Thank you for having me, Jennifer. I'm excited about being here and talking to you.
Yeah, so let's talk about Our Kitchen Table. I have a lot of questions to ask, but first I want to delve in a bit more into Our Kitchen Table and all that it does for our community. So first of all, you established OKT in 2003. What is it, you know, that got you started? I know in part to mobilize women with income and health challenges. So what is it that got you going with this?
You know, that's an interesting question. Actually, a girlfriend of mine, we were drinking wine, and she said, you need to start up a women's leadership organization in Grand Rapids. So it started with a grant became available through the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency. It's called an environmental justice grant. And I don't think we had had one here on the west side of the state. Grants have been awarded on the east side. And she said, I will help you write a grant focused on women dealing with the issue of childhood lead poisoning and helping women to address that issue and partner with an environmental group, which was the West Michigan Environmental Action Group, which is still here in this community. Mm-hmm. And she helped me write that grant. It was awarded. It was the beginnings of Our Kitchen Table mobilizing women, particularly women of color, to address an issue that was impacting our children. And from there, it just evolved. And I was clueless about environmental issues. Of course, I knew about the polar bears and other things that people know about. But it really opened opened an area that I was really very ignorant of, and the lack of folks of color being involved. I shouldn't say lack. I should say I wasn't aware of folks of color being involved. And so once I learned more about childhood lead poisoning and what actions were being taken around that across the nation and other issues that related to environmental concern and environmental stewardship and environmental racism, that was the opening for me launching Our Kitchen Table with the support of a mentor.
Okay, and so, of course, a lot of what you do, as you mentioned, strives to provide that knowledge about issues like healthy living, including growing your own food, addressing the lead poisoning, water safety, and the like. And those issues, you're still addressing those today. You started in 2003, 17 years now, and congratulations on that.
Oh, my God, can you believe that?
I know, when you put it in numbers, right, it seems like a very
yes.
long time. So those issues are still relevant today. We had the Flint water crisis, but when we
yes.
talk about here in West Michigan, those are things that are still on the table that you talk
yes.
about.
Yes, they are. So Our Kitchen Table has primarily evolved into a food justice organization with our roots starting looking at environmental health.
There's food justice? What is that?
Food justice is folks having a say in what our food system should look like in our community. What kind of grocery stores do we have? What kind of green space do we have for growing our own food? Do we want to raise chickens and be able to have chickens for eggs as well as for meat? Having our say around that and making sure that our public policy reflects what our say is. And so that's what food justice would be. We look at it through the lens of how do we make a difference as it relates to public policy, because public policy impacts all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. And so, again, those issues still important today, really.
They are still important today. And we have some wonderful organizations that are addressing more of the environmental issues. But the reality is issues are intersected. They are, you can't deal with food without dealing with economic justice, without dealing with environmental justice, without dealing with women's rights. They're mm-hmm. all connected to each other. And so we have some wonderful organizations here. Healthy Homes Coalition does a lot of work around lead poisoning. We have, as I said, the West Michigan Environmental Action. They do a lot of work around air and water. And our kitchen table, blending in that conversation around food justice, we do a lot of work around folks having a food system that supports them and them having say-so in that food system. What does that look like?
Absolutely. And making sure it's healthy, a healthy food system.
And making sure that it's a healthy food system. Now, I will admit, when our families grow tomatoes, we don't say grow tomatoes so you can have tomato juice. We say grow tomatoes so you can have a really good hamburger
right.
with delicious tomatoes on. And what is the benefit of that? Mm-hmm. You can, healthy doesn't mean an absence of or a mm-hmm. limitation. It's healthy means being informed about what it is that we're eating, how it's grown, who grew it, how do we support that entity that grew it. Like we need to love our farmers. Know your farmers, know your food. That is the truth
Absolutely.
About that. But the closer you are to growing your own food, the more power and control you have over what it is that you're choosing to take in. And so understanding that, having power over that, influencing what that is, all lends itself to being a healthier being.
Absolutely. And so in 2010, OKT's Food Diversity Project was born, as you're speaking of food. And again, this addressed those disparities that exist in a number of our communities. And you went into your neighborhoods, Easttown, Garfield Park, Baxter. If I'm missing anything, let me know. But expand on that a bit about OKT's Food Diversity Project that kicked off in 2010.
So 2010, that was our main project, which is our food growing entity. We have 17 years later, mm-hmm. we have evolved into having three strategies along with some additional programming. One is called Program for Growth, where we are working with local schools and helping them to grow their own food, not only at the school site, but also helping those families grow their own food. Two, we have Educate to Elevate. We're working with women who are pregnant, nursing, or have children a year younger, challenged around providing them with healthy foods and what does that look like. And then our third strategy is called A Sense of Place. Our kitchen table is fortunate enough to run a small base farmer's market. And mm-hmm. so we're growing that farmer's market. Under each one of those strategies, we now do the Food Diversity Project, which is our growing piece. We also do Cook, Eat, and Talk. And that is our meals preparation and planning piece. Basically cooking demos and what does that look like. And again, within our farmer's market, we are hoping to support, have breastfeeding support groups to come to the market, have story time at the market, along with our cooking demos and the food growers, the farmers, and the community garden, mm-hmm. backyard garden growers also being at our farmer's market. So in 2010, we learned from Detroit. We modeled an issue from them. They had a program called Greening of Detroit. We tried to replicate that here. So basically with our Food Diversity Project, we are providing schools and families with plants, seeds, soil, a basis for growing their food. Our household families, they get a container garden. So mm-hmm. they get 10 5-gallon buckets and six window boxes to grow between 175 to 225 pounds of food.
Wow.
With our schools, we give them raised bed, which is basically a demonstration garden. And along with that, I think what makes us unique that we learned from Greening of Detroit is we provide them with what we call a food garden coach and a cooking coach now. That was added on several years later. So with our food garden coach, just think of visiting nurses. That person visits you every week to help you with starting your garden, planting your garden, maintaining your garden, learning the basics of good growing practices, so to speak. We also do soil testing. We teach them how to water. We teach them about pest management, all of that good stuff. And we see folks go from growing their own garden from the first time to, it's just a tomato, to then 3 weeks later, it becomes Tommy the Tomato. They named the tomato, and they built a bond with the tomato.
They have fun with it, too.
They have fun with it. And then we're able to, you're growing your own garden, but what does the food system look like in your neighborhood? You know, do you have local stores you can go to and buy fresh produce? What does it mean to have the gas station to sell apples? What does it mean that Myers is on the outskirts of your community and you don't have anything in between in terms of going to buy fresh fruit? Do we believe that you live in a food desert? Our kitchen table does not support that. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that there are a lot of food that's growing in community that we're really unaware of, and that's something that's called urban foraging, where folks are able to identify food that is naturally growing. And food means your fruits and your vegetables, but it also means your herbs and your edible flowers. Like, for example, sunflowers is a food because that's where your sunflower seeds come from.
Absolutely.
In the brown part.
Mm-hmm.
And so do we have wildlife in the community? Not so much, squirrels or wildlife, but do we have butterflies? Do we have bees? You know, nation has been going through a disappearance of bees. And why is that happening? Because we need bees to pollinate flowers, and mm-hmm. flowers turn into fruit. And so it's the Food Diversity Project teaches all of those skills. Not only it starts with what about me and show me how to grow to I'm a part of a bigger food system. And mm-hmm. so there are several food gardens in my neighborhood. Well, if I go beyond my neighborhood, blocks over, do we have more food gardens? What's food retail and where can we buy that? For those who are buying food with food subsidies, where can I use my EBT card, mm-hmm. a bridge card? Where, if I'm a senior and I receive Senior Project Fresh, which is another food subsidy, where can I go and do that? So it's looking at the bigger picture and making sure that the bigger picture not only works for me and my family, but works for us all, because
so really
when we're all better with each other, then we're all healthier together.
That's a community
it is
effort.
A
it ends up
That's
with
right.
that.
That's right.
How do you feel being a part of that as a powerful woman looking at that? Because you started this process and now people are actually looking and they're getting educated about so many aspects about food. I don't think a lot of people sit and think the community response or, you know, some of the areas in which you're talking about. What's the reaction that you get and how do you feel about knowing, you know, this is a good thing. We have really, from 2003 to 2020,
yes,
you have seen the growth of this. I mean, how does that make you feel to see where you've come from to now? And people are really sustaining themselves through these gardens that you have.
Well, you know, it's overwhelming to think about that. I am only as good as the community I serve. I stand on the shoulders of many to do the work that I do. And it's so funny. I started this and I can't even cook. I'm going to say I'm not a good cook. Let me say
I was going to say you can cook.
I'm not a good cook. So when I say cook, my family looks at me and go, why? Why are you choosing to do that? And, you know, the reality, when there are others that do it better than you, why not tap into them? Like, you're an excellent cook. So I would much rather eat your food than my
food.
You're
very kind.
But when I look back at that in terms of seeing the transformation that I have made in terms of being connect with others to make this work mm-hmm. important and to make this work move and to make this work be transformative, I'm just overwhelmed. I know I'm not doing a very good job of describing this, but I have met so many wonderful people who are already growing. Growing is really not something new. I hate it when they describe in urban communities, let's get people to grow. The reality is that people are already growing, and they grow every year, and they're able to recognize the importance of growing their own and being able to go from garden to table, so mm-hmm. to speak. That's important to them, and they know who is providing. Like we have a vendor, the Tolberts, Robert and Jenny Tolbert, and they're the greens people, and they have wonderful collard greens. And people come far just to make sure that they have their greens because they know how delicious they are. Or we have a vendor by the name of Mrs. Harris, her and her husband, Tim, they provide us with cranberry beans. People know that.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to learn from them, how do you make that more available in the community? how does food make a difference? They've taught me the importance of leadership in this area and making sure that to think about the many and not of the few.
Mm-hmm. So as you look at this and all the accomplishments and learning and knowing and meeting these people, what perhaps are some of the barriers you may have encountered as you have moved from 2003 to 2020?
I think the biggest barrier I've had to overcome, and I wouldn't say that I've overcome it, that when it comes to growing food, it's usually seen as white men being the leaders in this conversation. That's not true. It's women of color, predominantly women, thinking about food. Not to say that men aren't, don't get me wrong, because I know my husband Anthony is a much better cook. Well, he is a cook than I am, and his food is delicious when he prepares it. But women are really the predominant leaders in this conversation and bringing about this transformation. And so often still we're dealing with men as the dominant voice. And mm-hmm. So that's been challenging in the sense of, not that we want to exclude men in any kind of way, but we do want to recognize that it's women of color, leading this effort, mm-hmm. leading the change.
What has it taken for you to find your own voice in all of this, to own it, to be comfortable in your own skin? Because you meet in front of boards, you're applying for grants, you're talking to people in the neighborhoods, but otherwise also talking to people who are head of the various organizations that you encounter and that perhaps lend a hand. What has it taken for you to find your own voice in this and to be happy in your own skin?
I am happy in my own skin. I love to eat. I love the importance of this work. Being assertive and not being afraid to stand up for what is right, and not being afraid to learn that I don't have all the answers. Many times I'm leaning on other people to help me with my voice, but being able to stand steadfast in what I believe in. I'm a person that likes to be behind the scene. I don't want to be you or our kitchen table. No, there are many of us that make up our kitchen table, from the communications coordinator to the food garden coaches to the cooking coaches. We all collectively make up our kitchen table. I have a fantastic grant writer that works for me. I can give her the content and she makes it all fancy and pretty with graphs and stuff. You know, that's a hard question, because I really do like to be behind the scenes, mm-hmm. because there are so many before me that set the path for me to be able to do this. But
that could lend to your voice.
It does, but I think my strongest, I don't know how to say this, but my voice resonates with humor and with, like, you know, I have on these pumpkin things.
Mm-hmm.
I am comfortable with who I am. Mm-hmm. I understand what it is that I need to do. I understand my path, and my faith is strong in God, and He will guide me. And I know that when I fall, I'll get back up and continue, and we'll learn and do better.
And you know, Lisa, they say laughter is good for the soul. What is it that makes you laugh?
What makes me laugh? I'm a Saturday Night Live fan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Dave Chappelle fan. I'm a, I can't think of Wanda's last name.
Oh, Wanda Sykes?
Fan. I love humor. I love talking with my girlfriends and just reflecting back on some funny times that we've experienced together. I love sitting at the family table and, you know, you knocked a chip off, you knocked a chip off. And we're all able to laugh about that. I love the fact that when we can look at some difficult situations and be able to find humor in it,
absolutely.
You know? But I think the biggest joy and laughter, if I can say, that comes to me is watching my daughters grow and seeing them evolve into the young women they're becoming into, and us reflecting back. Remember when she couldn't tie her tennis shoe and we would do that for her and blah, 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 blah. And just being able to look at the contributions I've made with them and seeing them be giving back to community,
and you
as
surely,
they've been taught by both me and Anthony.
And you surely give a lot. So as we get ready to wrap this up, do you, by chance, no pressure, but do you have a favorite saying or motto that you like to use to encourage anyone that you're around, whether it's your kids or OKT, the growing aspect of what you do?
You know, I always, I am a fan of the Boondocks. And I love it, the saying, and I will never forget, game recognized game, and you looking pretty unfamiliar. So when I go in and I start my conversation about growing, and we talk about what are we unfamiliar around, and how do we change that where we're much more in a knowing position than not. So the game is not taking advantage of us, but we're controlling the game.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Lisa Oliver King, for joining us today. And of course, we wish you all the best, as well as to stay healthy and safe. And a big thank you to all of our listeners for joining us for this edition of Powerful Women Let's Talk. I'm Jennifer Moss.
Thank you, Jennifer, for having me.
Produced by women about women, these powerful podcasts focus on powerful women and how their strength transforms who we are and how we live. Want to hear more Powerful Women Let's Talk? Get additional interviews at WGVU.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and subscribe. Powerful Women Let's Talk is produced by WGVU at the Meyer Public Broadcast Center at Grand Valley State University. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of WGVU, its underwriters, or Grand Valley State University.
Powerful Women Let's Talk is made possible in part by Family Fair, keeping it real.